Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Late Nights with the Midnight Bomber with Neutron Bomb and Captain B2. Pour it out, thick like honey, bittersweet like molasses, seeking your proliferous journey to profit to the empathetic masses, calling on cathartic release, expel your demons, if but for a moment increase then cease them, quell their influence, let them not commit treason. Tonight's show is a focus on prompts by Marcel Proust. We have a full board of some great poetry tonight. Always great, but I don't know. This contest is going to be a difficult one to judge. How are you going tonight, Captain?
I'm splendid. Thank you for asking. And how are you feeling?
Much freaking better.
You sound marvelous.
Yeah, it took so long to get over. Like, I struggled for the 2 weeks with the show, doing the show with tonsillitis. And then I decided, look, if I ever want this to go away, I'm going to have to take a break and leave you in charge.
Well, I didn't burn the place down, so. And I even imitated you last week, and I read your intro, pour it out thick like
that
honey.
That is awesome.
I did. I was proud of myself.
Fantastic.
So,
that's
fantastic. It looked like really great poetry. I can't wait.
Yeah. Look, you know what? I think Pam's stepped away for a second. So what I'll do is I'll jump onto the first poem and this one is quite a facetious read. I'll give it a read. It's we're going to Peter Solway straight off the bat.
No.
With music.
You're going to jump right in the 8-foot end, aren't you?
So it's called New Eyes by Peter Solway. Landscapes of recycled wish, sheep to dip, wool to knit, lamps to light, sailing out to sea, see more beyond me, telescope better than penis. England better than France, Reese the tops, Socrates to question, new eyes, new destinations, and poem. What did you think, Captain?
I think I need a translation.
Well, for starter, if it's any help,
the prompt is,
well, I found it this time. So the prompt is, the real voyage of discovery consists not in seeking new landscapes, but in having new eyes. Yeah, so I'll go first on this one if you want, Captain. I was literally laughing out loud when I read this. And I was trying to put my serious cap on right up until I got to the line, telescope better than penis. And he threw me for an absolute loop. And all I can say is it depends on a number of factors as to whether that's the case. And it's all a matter of perspective. But I'd say on that note, it was a damn interesting and somewhat facetious take on the prompt.
Yes, definitely. I strongly suspect that Peter has a streak of whatever I've got in me, in that he really enjoys saying things for shock value. Just to see the reaction he's going to get, he throws something against the wall to see if it'll stick. You know? And better than penis. You know, the visual imagery that conjures just won't go away. I can't unsee that. But it's actually more brief than I think I've ever seen Peter be. This is a Solway brevity.
I did think that myself. It was a short and powerful with a punch, I think. So, very, very unusual, as you said, to see something as brief as that from Peter. But it still had that classic Peter vibe to it, which I really enjoyed.
Oh, yeah.
So
I believe you could even call it pithy.
Pithy Peter.
Pithy Peter.
Oh, gosh.
Unusually pithy Peter. That was a great ride. That it is a good ride, though. I mean, I love the way you say facetious take on the prompt. That is a great characterization of that.
I think so. I'll just check. Pam, are you back with us as yet?
And
no,
with the crickets,
fine,
I would take that as a no.
That's all good. We'll jump on to the next poem. We've got a few, actually, to get through. We've got 21. So I'll get Mindful and up next. And, Captain, if you would like to give this one a read, that would be brilliant.
You know I live for that request. Revealed by Mindful. I painted a sky with emotion, a sea with tears of time. My eyes cried us an ocean, most deeply unconfined. Your eyes explored me in the depths where nightfall cannot creep. Your breath caressed and warmly kept what's only seen in sleep. Verdant waves fell to azure, crests capped in shiny white. Our canvas was a bit impure, but our story, oh, so right. We toiled in isolation. Our masterpiece was spilled by light of our constellation, my heart at last revealed. End poem.
Thank you, Captain. That was a great read. And thank you, Mindful, for the poem. And I just thought it was such a tender write, very expansive in its romanticism. And it really was a beautiful take on the prompt, I think. And just for everyone out there, the prompt was for this poem, only through art can we emerge from ourselves and know what another person sees. And I think my favorite part was your eyes explored me in the depths where nightfall cannot creep. Your breath caressed and warmly kept what's only seen in sleep. They're very deep lines. The thought that darkness cannot seep, it intimates that the closeness you have developed or the poet has developed with another, even in these times of toiling and isolation. And, I really enjoyed the rhyme as well. I thought it added to the romanticism of the overall poem. And what did you think, Captain?
I thought it was also a deeply romantic and emotional write. It has a subtle seductiveness and eroticism to it that is so underplayed to almost be escaped to escape detection. Because it is so delicately written. Verdant waves fell to azure, crest capped in shiny white. Our canvas was a bit impure, but our story, oh so right. We toiled in isolation. Our masterpiece was spilled by light of constellation. My heart at last revealed. It's very erotic, but subtly so. And so I think this is a very very skilled write, very nicely done.
Excellent comment, Captain. I really agree with your interpretation there. It's hard to add to that. Between the two of us, I think we've got it across the line for that poem. I'll move on to the next one. Poetic, we'll get you up as soon as Pam's back, and because we've got the sound out, so all right. So I will bring up Bryce Allen Monister's poem. Won't be a moment.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. Sure can.
Hello. Oh, cool. Okay, I thought I'd drop there for a second. Oh, Pam's back.
Come on, oh, yes.
Pam, did you have a chance to listen to the poem? Or should I pick you up on the next one?
Revealed by Mindful. Is that
yes,
the one?
Yes, that's the one.
Yeah, I didn't hear it, but I read through it when I came back. I think this is just absolutely beautiful. I really like, I painted a sky with emotion, a sea with tears of time. The idea of that we create artwork with our emotions behind it, or the idea that we observe nature and it brings those emotions to mind. This is just, it has a beautiful flow to it. It has a very thoughtful vibe. The ending line with the melancholy, we toiled in isolation, our masterpiece was stilled. The idea of putting your full ounce of work into creating something, I think is a beautifully written and very well done.
Pam, that was an excellent comment. And look, I'll give the next one a read because Bryce Allen Monister's poems are usually timed, so I'm not going to sing this one because I'm not aware of the song that he has written this to, but generally speaking, he will actually put the song, a link to the song in there so you can get a better idea of the cadence that he's working to. I'm looking forward to the day that he sends us a SoundCloud. So this one is... This one's called Mockingjay Desires, and it's a parody of The Hunger Games. He's a big fan of parodies. She keeps resisting me, an orange dawn, a home not homely. He keeps resenting me, my many flaws, patient lately. Shine, up Peter, shine much brighter over time. In darkness, slowly tread over backwards, gently bend. Oh no, a necessary shove. Buried worries come due, compounding interest, it's adding to our stress. She keeps resisting me, a perfect pawn, a chess piece trophy. She keeps resisting me with frozen words, thaws remotely. I know, no, she keeps resisting me, predictable, pause, she keeps resisting me. Katniss, fights, I'm reading him his rights, lasting long into the night, what was it that I said? Uh-oh. Sorry, pathetic apology. After shooting deep arrow at his head, missing as I fled. He keeps resenting me with weapons drawn to make life holy. He keeps resenting me, supplying gauze, love allegory. Come on, done. He keeps resenting me without the fun. Run, he keeps resenting me. Both. Crime never will suit you, so why does it fit? Unbelievable debut, stealing kisses missed, both fortune hunters withstanding death, love hanging beside you, twin noose. She keeps resisting me, a hit and run. He keeps resenting me, we're locking jaws, but do it safely. Yeah, yeah. She keeps resisting me, a battle won, but in name only. He keeps resenting me, I'm like a vase breaking easy. I know, no, she keeps resisting me, unwritten laws, bonds, he keeps resenting me. Sigh. Signs growing on the vine, dizzy heart is hypnotized. End poem. And Pam, would you like to make the first comment this time?
Oh, absolutely. That was really clever, the way he used the two main characters of The Hunger Games. And I have to agree, I really appreciate Bryce Allen and his talent for parodies, but, you know, he's always choosing these songs that I don't know and other people don't know, and it's fun to learn new songs, and it's fun to read the parodies, but I really would like to have him make recordings for us. That would be really fun. But the nice thing about a well-written parody is even if it's read instead of sung, it still reads really well because of the rhyme, the matching meter. I liked the back and forth style of it. I liked how it kind of had that, almost like a hip-hop vibe to it. And I like how, you know, it's been a long time since I read any of the Hunger Games, but it kind of reminds me, what it reminds me of is when Saturday Night Live does sketches that spoof the Hunger Games. And so I really enjoyed that, and it's very well done.
That was an awesome comment, Pam. I thought it was an interesting take on the prompt, and the prompt for this poem was desire makes everything blossom, possession makes everything wither and fade. And he's used two existing protagonists, as you mentioned, Pam, made famous by the movie trilogy and the books, by Suzanne Collins to depict the push and pull of possession and unrequited desire. And I think it works really well with the content as a metaphor for a possessive relationship and was done quite well. And I'll pass over to Captain, and what did you think?
Well, you didn't pass me over. I also think it is an interesting take on the prompt and relatable because most everyone I know or have talked to has had some exposure to the Hunger Games. And I being late in the game on that one, no pun intended, but I actually did finally get to see all of them last year. I just wait until the theater clears and then I buy my own. but it is clever to take the two protagonists that everyone's so familiar with and position them against this prompt where desire makes everything blossom, possession makes everything wither and fade. And it's a complex concept also. And what we, of course, what it reminded me of, and then me and my obscure universe, a comment from the original Star Trek series, where it is from the episode Amok Time, where Spock goes back to Vulcan because he is driven by the mating instinct for every 7 years, and apparently the woman who's supposed to be his wife has decided she likes someone else better, and he gets challenged. And the way it comes out in the end is he tells the guy, she is yours. But he said, you will find after a time that having is not so pleasing a thing as wanting. It is not logical, but it is often true. And I just, it reminds me the same thing. It said that having is not so pleasing a thing as wanting. And I think it's it talks about the anticipation in the poem of them being the resisting each other and the put, like you said, the push and pull of the relationship. But I think it's a very clever use of the characters, a very clever device to use to convey the prompt.
Poetic Picasso has just said that he has to fight the death with to the death with Kirk.
He likes sitting in the wings with us. I know. So throwing these little fingers at us.
I know. I just had to mention that one. But speaking of Poetic Picasso, he's up next. And Pam, we have a SoundCloud in the studio.
All right, here we go.
Mi amor, I can still feel the taste of your wine upon the texture of my dried lips, as my mouth yearns then to sip always from the drink of its Spanish aroma. Its slow intoxication quenches my thirst. Its substance is my bitter sweetness, but I drowned in the ocean of its effects. There is a desire billowing into a surf. The beauty of this wine consumes me as the romanticism of its lasting grapes, as they linger within the tip of my tongue, the discoveries of blossoming pleasures. My body burns in the acid color of carmine, and this wine becomes my wicked obsession. In its possession, no longer I control, for it wields dominion over me so passionately. I would rather drown swallowing this love than if the dryness of my parched lips deprived, longing to be submerged in the pool of wetness from the fine glass and bottle of your seduction. Without your taste, I would die of my thirst, but to possess its rapture, I would be succumbing to the strong urge of this insatiable desire to drink of your wine, my sour beverage. tu sabor me enloquece, tu vino luego me intoxica, me muero por no beberlo, y su placer es mi deseo. Your taste drives me insane, your wine then intoxicates me, I'm dying from not drinking it, and its pleasure is my desire. Ooh, mi amor. In the poem.
Wow. That was Jamie. Poetic, Picasso. You have outdone yourself with the SoundClouds once again. For me, this poem burns with the wildfires of seduction and longing. It is nuanced and addresses the prompt. Desire makes everything blossom. Possession makes everything wither and fade so very well. And my favorite part was, I would rather drown swallowing this love than with the dryness of my parched lips deprived, longing to be submerged in a pool of wetness from the fine glass and bottle of your seduction. I mention it, it's steamy, but just the production value with the music behind and almost the music seemed to speed up as you got to what I understand to be Spanish part of the poem, and it just builded like the poem as well. Captain, what did you think?
I think every time I listen to Frank read his poetry, I feel like a warrior. I shouldn't be listening to this, you know what I mean? but I can't help myself. You know, it is so, his verse is so provocative, yet it is so, it's provocative in such a subtle and artful way. There's not a tawdry thing about it. Yet it is rife with eroticism, but it's like seeing someone naked, but you're looking at them through a lace curtain, you know. And it just there's nuance, there's shading, there's light and dark, and there's something left to the imagination. Whereas, you know, like full on frontal nudity, there's nothing left to the imagination. You just feel like it's a physical. But this is eroticism, I think, through a veil, and it lends itself to more to the imagination and more to what is it I'm trying to say here? I'm thinking in terms of almost a classical approach to it, he's. Without a doubt, he is the master of this this style of poetry. I mean, I had to listen to this every day. It would drive me to distraction. Frank, we gotta stop meeting like this, Frank. Seriously, really do love his work. He's so skilled and so gifted with the way that he his metaphors are crafted and phrased. It is beautiful. It really is.
Thank you, Captain. That was a great comment. Pam, what did you think?
Oh yeah, this was definitely en fuego and muy caliente. I really.
Well said.
Thank you. And like you guys mentioned, on a technical level, he's got greatly executed sound clouds, very well balanced reading and music, wonderful use of imagery. I like how this is a seductive piece that reminds us of two lovers enjoying each other's physical company. But on the other hand, because he approaches it with the extended metaphor of the tasting and the enjoyment of wine, it also reminds us that wine in itself is a pleasure to be lingered upon. Just an excellent write all the way through and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment.
And Pam, would you do us the honor of reading the next poem by Chamath Akalanga?
I would be happy to. Let me go ahead and get back there. And all right. Up next is I Tried Without Relief by Chamath Akalanga. And it goes like this. Confusions continued, grew cold as the match left untouched. Since last instance, it had been used to brought a flame to her decidedly prolific frame that she may know how much do I love her. End poem.
Thank you, Pam. You always do brevity so well, and that was purely coincidental. I'll get Captain to comment first on this one. What did you think?
I thought it was an exquisite brevity. As you said, Pam executes brevities so beautifully. And this is very interesting. Confusions continued, grew cold as the match left untouched since last instance it had been used. And it seems like the metaphor is speaking to a relationship that hasn't been rekindled since the last time they saw one another. Brought a flame to her decidedly prolific that I may know how much do I love her. It's like he's trying to rekindle that spark that they had earlier. So this is really for brevity, it's got a tremendous amount of depth to it and to what it's trying to convey.
Thanks, Bobby. Just so for anyone listening out there and for my fellow peeps, the prompt for this one was love is space and time measured by the heart. And I really think it was a good take on the prompt.
Yes.
There seems to be a longing in this brevity that is strengthened by the use of the match and the flame as metaphor for the heat. And as you mentioned, the lack thereof in this relationship. But even so... It wouldn't be the first instance of unrequited love, and I think he's captured that really well. So,
beautifully.
Pam, you gave it a read. What did you think?
Yeah, it's not easy to write a brevity like this because there's so few words that you can't waste a single one. And within that, he really gets his sense of emotion across. And the ideas you both have mentioned, the offering up of the match and how everything is so cold because the love is only there on one side. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Pam, I'm just going to put Versus Goliath's poem in the forum, and there is a SoundCloud, I believe, for this one as well.
All right. You ready?
1 second. Done. Okay, when you're ready.
Retinue Detach by Versus Goliath. Plop. Plop. Optics optional. Pillow nest vision. Silo tickets tonal. Plow power tool. Flowers crumble. Picked preamble. Coward weeds. Dandard lying. Meander lullabies. Candor smiling. Me and her alibi. Condors fly. Meet morsel tried. Encore flings. Manicore sting. Anticipation. Hypoxia. Blue face. Ntis. Uwat. Vapor clock. Pacing. Enter bliss zone. Evaporate to space. Gaseous patience, high-low pressure, cease. B, nectar collector, humming hard. Winged hair, reflect, drum, heart, drum. Uneven artwork flex, ba-dum, ba-dum. Sun, stars, specks, seem so far away. End poem.
Thank you, Versus, for the SoundCloud. We actually had, I think, the most number of SoundClouds we've ever had submitted in this episode. So that's always a joy. And this was written to the prompt, "The real voyage of discovery consists not in seeking new landscapes, but in having new eyes." And with that, Captain, would you like to make the first comment on this poem?
Oh, this is one of those very complex pieces that can't be digested, by me anyway, in one reading, because it says the new landscapes with having new eyes. Optics optional, pillow nest vision, silo ticket tonal, plow power tool. There's an assemblage here of metaphors that that overlie one another and kind of escape me. But it's one. It clearly there's a lot of layering and depth to this piece. It just some of it comes forward to me like evaporate to space, gashes, patience, high low pressure cease. And bee, nectar collector, humming hard, winged hair reflect, drum, heart, drum. It just, like I said, I can't really render an opinion that would be worthy of this piece because it is so complex, it just would require some study on my part. I'm sorry.
No, I actually think... In all seriousness, I had a read of the author note, and Goliath Versus said, "I had a lot of fun with the concept of seeing from a new perspective and let my imagination go wild a bit. Please let me know what you think. Is it too abstract?" And the thing is, if you look at the prompt,
thank you.
Right, it's all about seeing with new eyes, or the real voyage of discovery consists not in seeking new landscapes, but in having new eyes. And I think he's really taken it to heart. So, yes, it is an abstract poem. I love the use of onomatopoeias throughout the write. It really adds an oral depth to the poem. And when I read it a lot quicker in my mind than the cadence that Versus actually did. And I think, realistically, when something is as abstract as that, even though it's a fast-paced read in the mind, it's better for it to be the slower pace when it's actually read out loud. And the use of the format and the punctuation and the internal rhyme dispersed throughout, I think, really added to it as well. And what did you think, Pam?
Oh, I always enjoy Versus writing and reading, and it's very intriguing and thought-provoking. It's really cool when you get SoundClouds from people and recordings. He's written a couple for a couple of central contests that I have running that I'm really hoping to hear read in his voice. This one, I had to look up the definition of the word retinue, and I noticed it's another word for entourage, like a group of advisors, assistants, or others accompanying an important person, such as a rock star, the security guards, personal cooks, and such. And I think that puts that with detachment, it's the whole idea of someone who has started to realize they don't really like all those people around them because, you know, this is the impression I get, because they're unable to think for themselves. I mean, you know, like I almost get the idea and the impression in general that it's somebody who at first was enjoying that kind of attention and then wanted to step out on their own. Like where it says, evaporate space, gaseous patience, high-low pressure cease. Bee nectar collector humming hard. The bee nectar collector humming hard kind of has the idea to me of how so many rock stars, singers, have that kind of sexual energy that attracts people to them. And It does remind, I saw this slightly off topic, but I can't resist repeating this. I saw this interview with, and I can't remember the person's name, but he was a punk rock singer in like the 1970s, and he was on some sort of like talk show, and he was telling this story about how he was so obnoxious and so full of himself, and everybody put up with him until one day this big strong roadie had just enough of his shit and hung him up by some sort of pulley thing and yanked him up to the ceiling. And I listened to that story and it just cracked me up because I can just imagine that, being so full of yourself until somebody hangs you by your ass on the ceiling. But the poem, yeah, the poem was excellent.
That's awesome.
That is. I like that story. Thank you.
Your segue and your comment in general was awesome, Pam, as always. And next we've got a poem by Seda Haven, and I'll give this one a read. And it's called Void Light Moon, and it's for Matt, who recently passed of cancer. As I rinse the moonlight from my eyes, may the tears collect in crystal, and in them I will write of you, dangling between heaven and hell, twisting in sweat-soaked sheets and wrestling with the words for what makes us humane. I am happy to walk the journey with you, you told me through screens. I hold your words in the palm of my hand and breathe into them, a chapel, a holy place, the place where I keep you. My grief sharpens my pen and from it you flow. Your warmth remains in the marrow of my bones, but I need your race to guide my hand. I need the tears, the ink of a dark moon void of light, to write the pain of your loss. I still walk beside you, my friend. The journey continues past disease and death. I see you more clearly now, shimmering darkly in the knowing smiles of the changing moon. End poem. And this was written to Happiness is Beneficial for the Body, the Powers of the Mind. And Pam, would you like to start off the comments for this poem?
Absolutely. First of all, I'm truly sorry for her loss and the loss and grief that all his family and friends must be feeling. It even when you don't know a person, it hits hard for some. But when you hear of somebody who's young, dying of such, it's just horrible. But I like how she. Is processing her grief through poetry. That is, as I always say, one of the beautiful things about poetry is it can be so therapeutic for us. And it also gives us a chance to write about something that somebody can read and go, I can relate to that. That is expressing what I feel also. I think this is just, it's a beautiful heartfelt write, and I really like, I hold your words in the palm of my hand and breathe into them, a chapel, a holy place, the place where I keep you, my grief sharpens. And there's always going to be that fluctuation in grief. Some days it'll be sharper than others. And I like the imagery of physically holding the words, the memory. And so a beautiful write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. That was a lovely comment. And Captain, would you like to go next, please?
This is such an eloquent interpretation of the writer's selected prompt. He's very poignant and tender. And I agree with Pam. The lines that drew me in, I hold your words in the palm of my hand and breathe into them. My pen and my grief sharpens my pen, and from it you flow. Your warmth remains in the marrow of my bones, but I need your wrath to guide my hand. I need the tears. Boy, this is such an extremely relatable piece, as it reminds us all of the loss of someone that we love, be it a friend or family, and the fragility of love and of life, and reminds us of our mortality and how we should appreciate who and what we have while we have them, lest they be gone or we be gone. We all, I think, go sometimes to walk around thinking we're bulletproof or that this is going to go on forever. And then you have something like this happen, and it reminds you that death is the debt that we all have to pay.
Thank you, Captain. I agree with both of you in that it was a deeply personal rite, a very cathartic poem. And I just have to thank the poet for trusting us to hold space and read this on our show. I think there was a poison grace in the poem. And for me, it was deeply poignant having lost my best friend last year, obviously under different circumstances. Her friend was taken from this earth in the prime of his life. And as was mentioned, we're truly sorry for your loss. And I think grief, in my experience, comes in waves, and writing will only serve to help, not hinder, the grieving process. I was drawn to the same part. Your warmth remains in the marrow of my bones. It reminds me of a saying in this poem that helped me through my grief: even stars need darkness to shine. And I like to think my friend and also your friend are waiting for us amongst the celestial bodies. So very well done. And with that, we will move on to the next poem. And I'll just pop that in on the board now. And Captain, if you can give this one a read when it's in there, and it's by Captain Kerr. Captain, are you on mute?
Of course.
Lucky, I thought I dropped again.
Oh no, it's me. And I was doing so well with that mute button. I'm just going to remark. I was just I was going to read this for a person, Captain Kerr, and I said I like his work, and then I'm reminded that some of these names are so androgynous. We don't know. I mean, like mine. Captain B2, I could be anybody, male or female, or, you know, the pronouns get so tangled. Monolith of Self by Captain Kerr. On the belief that life will always suckle me, give the withdrawal, the withal to move up another step, be enriched by the clear poverty of living, directing triumphs, protecting me to the last. In this conclave of mind, I stare boldly and scheming, reinfected by the gaiety of the young, receiving joy from the simple garden pleasures sung by the blossoms that reach out trusting to the sun. This moment is the only truth afforded, the future filled with falsehoods I must never cast. Rewards are held present, earnest heartbeat, pass the new drafts, and gray the monolith of self. End of poem.
Thank you, Captain. That was a great read. And thank you, Captain Kerr, for the poem. And Pam, would you like to start off the comments this time?
Oh, absolutely. I really enjoy Captain Kerr's writing. He did a wonderful job with brevity. And that phrase, that Latin phrase, carpe diem, seize the day, that very much applies to this rite. I feel like this is somebody that embraces life, that is, feels the encouraged to not only enjoy and appreciate their own strength as a person, but just to go out there and grab life by the horns. Just an excellent rite and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. That was a great comment. And I'd agree with you there. My roommate, my family are always saying, do not dwell on the past, do not live in the future, be focused on now, mainly because I'm a serial procrastinator. And there's a real mindful quality to the first stanza as well, which fits with the prompt, "The real voyage of discovery consists not in seeking new landscapes, but in having new eyes." And in general, the sentiment of the poem, and my favorite lines were, "Reinfected by the gaiety of the young, receiving joy from the simple garden pleasures sung by the blooms that reach out trusting to the sun." Very well done. And Captain, you gave it a read. What did you think?
I thought this was a very well-crafted, a very elegant brevity, extremely skilled writing. The last stanza, "This moment is the only truth afforded, the future filled with falsehoods I must never cast. Rewards are held in this present, earnest heartbeat." That line, especially, "rewards are held in this present, earnest heartbeat." I can't remember how many bits of writing by Buddha on living in the moment. And I like you, I did the similar thoughts and writings. I had one of my pieces in the last stanza, I wrote, "Do not look for me in the past. I do not live there." And I'm the same way. I don't live in the past. I live in the present. And the moment is only the only truth afforded. Again, it talks about not living in the future, not living in the past, but living in the present. And this is a really tremendous brevity. Very well done.
Thanks, Captain. And next we have a poem by Art Junkie. Mm-hmm. And Pam, if you are available to read this one, it would be greatly appreciated.
Absolutely. This is "In Odd Silence" by Art Junkie. And it goes like this. "My mind is quiet around you, settled as a red dust at sunset, easing down a sleepy horizon. It's not the usual dark tempest from when where pregnant worries spiral as maple seeds helicopter from swaying trees, finding no purchase to sprout in fertile soil. I am as calm, see, still and reflective as mirrored glass under cloudless sky. My body is still around you, paused in awe, silence as at the seam of your shoreline, moved by steady waves lapping at the lip edges of your pristine green country, leaving no prints of presence on rugged skin nor signs of passage through coarse gray stubble, no rock overturned on rigid muscle, nor blood left on shoulder blades skirting the bones of your skyline, exploring your body, not claiming it. My love is full against you, contented as a satiated bee, languishing in lazy sunshine, drunk on honey and high on pollen, buzzing from purple lilac liqueur and yellow sifted daisy powder, your late spring gardens exploding under a low evening sun, petals opening one by one, as reluctant fingers unfolding from this tightly budded fish of your rough and thorny hands." End poem.
Thank you, Pam. That was a great read. And thank you, Art Junkie, for the poem. This was written to probably one of our more popular prompts for this episode, and it was, "My destination is no longer a place, rather a new way of seeing," or very similar to one of the other prompts we've been reading. I just thought it was a really nuanced and seductive poem, and I really enjoyed the prompt that was selected. And it was an interesting instance of ekphraxis when you look at the image that accompanied the poem, which was "Lilac Landscape" by Michael Cartwright. And the other day, I've been really getting into this documentary series called Portrait of the Year. And one of the artists actually had, so whilst he was capturing the likeness of his subject. He also had an art book open to a particular painting by a classic artist to capture the likeness or the mood of his character. So it was completely completely at odds with the person that was the subject for the day. I suppose what I'm trying to say is that Art Junkie has kind of employed the same principles in tackling this prompt, and I just thought it was a really inspired write. So what did you think?
Inspired write is a very good way of putting it. I think it's a very, very cerebral piece, very deep, very layered. It has a very classical feel to it. My mind is quiet around you, settled as a red-dusted sunset easing down a sleepy horizon. I mean, this is so beautifully worded that the command of language in this is superb. It is not the usual dark tempest from where pregnant worries spiral as maple seeds helicopter from swaying trees. Just exquisite visual imagery here. Again, I am as a calm sea, still and reflected as a mirrored glass under a cloudless sky. This is such stunning visual imagery. This is Art Junkie is he's painting, he or she is painting a word picture here, and is doing it with such grace and such skill. It's a very seductive piece. I think it almost reminds me in its skill of and use of language of some of Frank's work, in that it talks about love and it talks about physical love, but in such a subtle and graceful way that there's absolutely nothing salacious about it. This is an exquisite write. I'm going to save this one in my favorites.
I'm sure Art Junkie will appreciate that. I actually think this one is FPP worthy. I think I might actually put this forward for an FPP when I finish the show. oh, that's good. That's good. You beat me to it. And Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, I really like this one and appreciate it. Wonderful use of imagery. Has a beautiful and unique voice, and it was it's really strong. And I like the message of feeling as if somebody's presence calms you, feeling as if you can take time to just lean against them and relax and not worry about the world, you know. And I like the lines, especially. Overturn on rigid muscle, nor blood left on shoulder blades, skirting the bones of your skyline, exploring your body, not claiming it. I like the idea of two people being there for each other and yet knowing that each of them is an individual, not to be claimed. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. I think the comments have been really on point tonight from everyone, which is great. And the poets have just been fantastic. So just a shout out to everyone who's contributed tonight. And we'll move on to the next poem. And it's by Robert J. Teese. And Captain, if you can give this one a read, it would be greatly appreciated.
You betcha. And I'll even take myself off of mute to do it. How's that?
I was going to say that, but I thought that might come across a bit bitchy.
No, I've just been trying to be mindful of being a good citizen, because many times Pam has said, you know, you've got background noise going on, you know, please mute yourself. And so I'm trying to be, you know, behave myself. And when you're drinking out of a cup that has a metal straw in it, it would sound like I was tuning my car. So, okay. Law of Special Relativity by Robert J. Teese. A union of coordinates from where we stand and who we were to how we reach eternal love. Our special relativity, encircling endless energy, inertial births new sprung from mass. No sooner flowing, knowing, showing, referential, fixed, yet going, embodying velocities in fields of possibilities, framing moments, lost to sight, bound, how bound, now boundless, by our constant light. End of poem.
Great read, Captain, and thank you, Robert, for the poem. And Pam, would you like to start off the comments for this poem?
Absolutely. This is wonderfully intriguing. The interesting thing about this poem is the way it mixes science and poetics, you know, the idea that it has so much scientific terminology and yet has this kind of emotion that you feel could only truly come from a poet. You know, the idea of reaching eternal love, that special relativity encircling endless energy, inertial burst, new sprung from mass. You know, comparing love to the birth of a star or the birth of a cosmos, the creation of light, I think is just absolutely powerful. And I really like how he also puts framing moments lost to sight, found new bounds. I like, there's something about that is very layered, because on one hand, you know, it could mean just simply, you know, taking time to enjoy the moment. But it also kind of like makes me think of scrapbooking, you know, or preserving images through photography. I think this is just a beautiful and thoughtful write and very well done.
Excellent comment, Pam. I was actually drawn to the same section as well. Inertial birth, new sprung from mass, no sooner flowing, knowing, showing, referential, fixed yet going. And just the flow to the poem, the internal rhyme, and again, I'm repeating you, Pam, but just the fact that the scientific principle has been framed around a romance, it was just a very clever, intimate write. And I really think the coalescing of science and love worked very well, especially with the way in which the two principles were interweaved by Robert. And I thought it was a very, very clever write, and I actually added this one to the finalists. So I think also this could be FPP worthy if you beat me to this one too, Captain.
Oh, no. This one's all yours, dear. I threw the other one up there while everyone else was discussing it, but this one's all yours.
Cool. Robert JT, so I'm going to put this up for an FPP, so we'll see how you go. Captain, what did you think?
I enjoyed it thoroughly. I think this is a very cerebral write. It is a brevity of real complexity. The internal wordplay and rhyming is quite subtle, quite artful. Velocities, possibilities, bound, now boundless by our constant light. And the way it is formatted, the way it's structured, lends itself to a particular way of reading it, which lends emphasis to the different parts of it. Encircling endless energy, pause, inertial births, new sprung from mass. And I also, and not simply because I do it, but I like including, I like when verse does include science or philosophy, because it should, I think there's a complex mind at work that can pull in different aspects of life and merge them successfully into something like what we just read.
Don't comment, Captain. And that's actually why I got you to read that one, because I thought it would be one that would resonate. So we have a... That's all right. And next we've got a poem by Kel Smiles. And I will get Pam to give this one a read when I've posted it, which I've done now.
All right. This is Love Every Moment by Kel Smiles, and it goes like this. Blessed are the lovers' delight, hearts full, bodies in twilight, given to each other equally, souls stretched through eternity. Freedom of expression is essential, for love is noted as unpredictable, falsely accused as being infallible. Instead, lessons learned are invaluable. Intimacy is the knowing glances. Timeless acceptance is the balance. Passion's flare in emotional tension. Lifestyle resides in harmony's extension. Conversely speaking of hopeful dreams, reality is laughing, living in time's schemes. Marriage isn't the only the I do's or vows. It is living every moment despite flaws. End poem.
Great read, Pam. And this was written to the prompt, Love is Space and Time Measured by the Heart. And Captain, would you like to make the first comment for this poem?
Sure. Love is space and time measured by the heart. I wish I'd said that. You know, it's a great phrase. It's a great thought, and it's very provocative. And the way Kel Smiles has approached this with the couplets, I think, is so elegant. It breaks these into separate thoughts, and almost like little mini poems here. Passions flare in emotional tension. Lifestyle resides in harmony's extension. They could easily, each of the couplets is so well constructed, they could easily stand alone. But the combination together is, under the title Love Every Moment, is such a really well crafted piece and a very enjoyable read, very smooth.
Thanks, Captain. That was a great comment. And Pam, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought these are beautifully written couplets that reflect upon the prompt, chosen prompt, really nicely. I like how it's all about how you really have to accept each other's flaws to balance time together and to work at love and to work at a relationship rather than just expecting everything to fall into place. There's a real sense of love, but love encased within reality. So excellent write and very well done.
Well said.
Thanks,
well
Pam.
Said.
It was, wasn't it? I actually, I've never been married before, but I think the advice in this poem rings true, and the lessons conveyed within this write also ring true. So, like, I find often, at least in my relationships, it's possible to get wrapped up in getting to the altar, and thankfully I didn't get to the altar. but the thing is, sometimes you forget that the happily ever afters take a lot of fucking work. And I just think she's captured that really well here. And my favorite part was intimacy is in the knowing glances, timeless acceptance is the balance. Passions flare in emotional tension, lifestyle resides in harmony's extension. And again, a shout out to the flow and the rhyme and the couplet structure. So just very well done.
Extremely. And that's, but that you make a profound point in that if you notice that all of our cherished fairy tales ends with, and they live happily ever after, and has no mention whatsoever about how messy a married life is, and how, you know, Prince Charming leaves his socks on the floor and doesn't hang up the wet towels, and Snow White once a month is a real, real bitch on wheels. You know, you don't get that part.
All right, I've got the next poem up, And Pam, if you are available to give it a read, that would be greatly appreciated.
Well, I wouldn't mind, but I did just read Kel, so are you sure you're calling on the right person?
Oh, crap. Yeah, no, actually, I'm just having, like, not even a blonde moment, because the blondes are awesome.
No worries.
I'm technically having a brunette moment.
So I'm just wondering. So it's called Firestorm, and this is by Glive, and it goes, a bright orange tornado is what we all go through. Some burn at the outskirts, stopping, frying, and the others walking straight through. Can you let the smell, delicious smell of bacon, lead them to solace? End poem. I think I butchered that a bit, but I'll just read that last part again. And the others walking straight through can let the delicious smell of bacon lead them to solace. End poem again. And, Captain, what did you think?
No earthly idea. Not a clue. The only thing I can glean from this is that we all go through tough times, and we each handle them differently. Some implode, some collapse, and some go through it with grace and aplomb and come out the other side to breakfast.
That's a pretty bloody good comment. That's because I forgot to give you the prompt. We are healed of the suffering only by experiencing it to the full. And I'm going to borrow your phrase and say, you would have said it was economical in word use and concept, being a great remedy. And we do not generally end up unscathed when it comes to suffering, but I think sometimes suffering is multifaceted and also a bit nuanced, and it's not all doom and gloom. And as Glive has put it, simply and also best, let the delicious smell of bacon lead them to solace. So I think your interpretation was spot on, Captain. And Pam, what did you think?
I think, well, I don't know. I think bacon makes everything better. But I did like Captain's Bobby's analogy of the poem. But you know, it's interesting because you know, and I think you did a wonderful read, but I think part of what threw it off in the ending is the fact, and this is one of the wonderful things about poets, is so often we have a unique way of thinking. And so, like with a poem like this, you start out with the imagery of a bright orange tornado, and it's such fierce imagery. And then within two short stanzas, you're getting to just enjoying the smell of bacon. And it's difficult to adjust to the kind of unique thinking that poets have, to jump from one emotion to the next. And you know, I think that it's that wonderful idea of taking advantage of the moment. Like, you know, some, as it says, burns on the outskirts of the firestorm, and some just simply use it for heat, for making something delicious. And, you know, and as I said in Late Night Poets, posted, bacon is like meat candy. So, excellent question. Very well done.
That's awesome.
Well, you know,
I love your
if you ever visit here, Pam, I will take you over to the local Five Guys, and we'll get you a bacon milkshake.
Oh my gosh.
What place?
Five Guys.
Oh, you know, they actually have, once a year, they have an event where they raise money for autism. Do you know that?
Oh, no, Five Guys? No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. They do.
Cool.
Yep. Yeah. I don't know if it's every one of them, but I know, like, I went to some town that had it, and they you know. But I've heard that I've been there once. Good food. So yes, I would definitely, if I ever came to visit, I would take you up on that offer.
Well, we'll take you over there to get your bacon burger with a bacon milkshake on the side.
Oh, yum. That sounds good.
You're making me hungry.
Right?
Oh, gosh. And I am just going to double check. I believe there is a SoundCloud for the next poem by Lynn Gauthier.
Oh.
Yes, there is. Here we go.
I'll be there. I could rage. I could cry. But what's the use? Do I hate cancer for what it did to us? You bet. It robbed us blind. It left a gaping hole, an emptiness that's inescapable. Truth is, I'd rather live with the void of you than whitewash any of your love. No, we didn't let cancer get the best of us. We refused to live in fear. We managed to treasure every moment, let go of all regrets. Forever I'll keep your memory alive, 'cause in my heart you'll always be. I have so much to do before it's time. But no matter when or where, I will be ready, adorned in my finest gown with flowers in my hair, for you to take my hand and walk me down the aisle that glorious second time.
Wow, that was a very personal and raw right. And a poignant answer to the prompts, we don't receive wisdom. We must discover it for ourselves after a journey that no one can take for us or spare us. It was a very difficult read, and I can only empathize with Lynn and her past husband and their journey. But having said that, there is an unbridled resilience to their journey. And I think that Lynn has captured that in the following lines. No, we didn't let cancer get the best of us. We refused to live in fear. We managed to treasure every moment, let go of all regrets. The reference to adorning the wedding dress once more was just so beautiful and so painful at the same time. I thought it was lovely and also had despairing notes, but overall just a very good write. And Pam, what did you think?
Oh, my gosh, yeah, it hits hard. It's beautiful. It's emotive. It has that raw, honest. I like how she opens it up. I could rage. I could cry. But what's the use? Do I hate cancer for what it did to us? You bet. You know, the honesty in that, that you know, yes, I hate cancer. Yes, I hate, you know, what happened that I've lost you. And you feel it all, the sadness, the anger. But at the same time, as the last few stanzas focus on, is that time they did get together, that time that, you know, they got, it's like the appreciation for the little moments and the big moments and, you know, just being able to be there for each other, just a powerful rite and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. That was a great comment. And Captain, what did you think?
Very relatable, right? I don't think any of us has not experienced a loss of some kind through the big C, through cancer. About 3 years ago, I lost two of my best friends within months of each other, both women younger than I, and both to cancer. And it just it had me reeling for months. But this is so beautifully phrased, and there's a resilience, like you said. Truth is, I'd rather live with the void of you than whitewash any of your love. and it, she's cherishing the fact that they did have that life together, and even though it was cut short prematurely, she still put a premium on the time that they had together. I'll keep your memory alive, because it's in my heart. You'll always be. That says it all, and it says it so beautifully. This is a very visceral write, and a tough read. So I compliment Lynn on this write, because this could not have been an easy piece to pen for her.
Couldn't agree more on that point. I think this prompt has really dragged a lot of catharsis out of our poets today. And not to say that our earlier prompts haven't, but today's been, for the most part, I don't know what I'm trying to say. It's just poised but painful is probably what I'm trying to say.
Evocative.
So with that, yeah, that's it, evocative, that's it. And I've got the next poem up, and Bobby, would you like to give this one a read? It's by Katie Hepburn.
Oh, yeah, of course. Okay. We All Live Nowhere by Katie Hepburn. I lift the piano guard, freely bridged fingers across thermionic chords, craving death at crescendo crux of Handel's Sarabande, my body surging, carried forth and forever upward. There amongst symphonies and songsters, Callas, Pavarotti, Bowie, Joplin, meadowlarks, and crow, their flowing gowns, tea and tarts with frangipani, no shirt nor shoes, heaven's foremost polity. Post a storm, two translucent femmes of mislaid wings, one a friend of obscurity, her sister fair, both arcanum in essence. Ponder in vision the rustle of welkin in voices, absence of movement, an absence in movement of air. We all live nowhere in symbiosity. End poem.
Thank you, Bobby. That was a great read. I've stepped away for 1 second and I've lost the poem. Here we go. Okay. So this was actually written to We Are Healed of Suffering Only by Experiencing It to the Full. I actually listened to Handel's Sarabande while I was reading the poem, which I read a couple of times to really let it sink in. And it is a beautifully forlorn and almost haunting quality to it as well, much like Katie's poem. It kind of reminded me of an Australian classic movie called Picnic at Hanging Rock. I'm not sure if either of you are familiar with it. I enjoyed the correlations that were made within the poem. Yeah. And about heaven and the suffering of individuals and almost how our suffering is symbiotic, at least that was my interpretation. And it's almost as if the suffering has led to a martyrdom with all those legends in heaven with their flowing gowns, tea and tarts with frangipani, no shirt nor shoes. The first stanza really resonated with me the most. The craving death at crescendo's crux of Handel Sarabande and the body surging carried forth and forever upward. It was a really moving take on the prompt and a beautifully crafted poem. And Pam, would you like to go next?
Yeah, I really appreciate and enjoy Katie's writing. She has a wonderful, unique voice all her own. And I like how you can tell she just gets into the moment of playing the piano. I just, the imagery of lifting the piano guard, When my mother would play the piano when I was a kid, you'd sit there next to her, and she'd lift up that piano guard, and you just knew you would like. Well, I would anyways. There would be just such a sense of anticipation because you knew the music was going to start. I really liked this all the way through. Wonderful use of imagery and wonderful use idea of just really enjoying the emotion and appreciating the emotion in the moment.
Thank you, Pam. That was a lovely comment. And Captain, what did you think?
I really enjoyed this piece. I thought it was a very cerebral piece, very complex. I lift the piano guard, freely bridge fingers across thermionic chords. And then she handles Sarabande, and she talks about Callas and Pavarotti and Bowie and Joplin, Meadowlarks, which is for anyone who really loves classical music. One of the classic pieces out of Britain is by Ralph Vaughan Williams, and it's called The Lark Ascending. And it is a very ethereal piece. The reference to this is very in context with the ethereal nature of what she's speaking of. It shows a love of the classics and of the complexities and a love of the complexities of life. One, a friend of obscurity, her sister Fair, both arcanum in essence, and her author's notes, arcana is a secret mystery, a supposed great secret of nature that the alchemists sought to discover, which I thought was a very interesting reference. Ponder, envision the rustle of welkin in voices, absence of movement in air. So I really enjoyed this piece, and it makes you think. So I really did enjoy that.
That was a great comment. And next, if you're available in the studio, Pam, we've got a recording by Gerald E. Green.
I am. Let me just mosey over there. And I'm sorry, whose name did you say?
Gerald.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Fence and Field, written and read by Gerald Green. Epigraph. Desire makes everything blossom. Possession makes everything wither and fade. By Marcel Proust. The cow stood next to the fence line. She looked to the other side, at first with appreciation and a belly filled with clover. She knew her own field well, had been here all her life. This pasture was a faithful provider, always protected and richly verdant. A small stream flowed through its center, not muddy, but clear as spring rain, where thirst could be quenched any time of day, from pools along its banks. Beyond the fence were juicy buds, drifts of yellow inviting her. She had noticed them 2 days ago in morning sun while chewing cud. They captivated every thought from all directions in her brain. The yellow buds called endlessly with promises of juicy taste. She barely noticed how her milk production slowed and how much stress crept in with conflict as its aim because of what she couldn't have. How could she know of records kept, of gallons milked and butterfat, statistics made determining her fate as dairy cow or meat? This afternoon she found herself alone, no longer with the herd, a place where she could watch the buds in peace with no disturbances. She eased her head between the wires, ignoring pain from sharpened barbs, and tasted of the other side, within her reach, some morsels sweet, increasing her desire for more. She must have more or nothing else, and so she stayed all day and night, refusing to be coaxed away. But then, a tractor with a chain arrived, with men who didn't smile, but all she thought of were those buds, those yellow buds she couldn't reach. End poem.
Firstly, thank you, Gerald, for the sound recording. And I just think this extended metaphor is both brilliant and disturbing because it has a sound base in reality. And you mentioned the prompt at the beginning, which was desire makes everything blossom, possession makes everything wither and fade. And I think you really captured the possession and the stress it caused for the yellow buds beyond the fence line. And it ultimately led to her demise. I think on another note, where we end up as a means for milk or meat is partially in our own hands. And this poem speaks both literally and metaphorically to this point. The part that resonated the most with me was this afternoon she found herself alone, no longer with the herd, a place where she could watch the buds in peace with no disturbances. She eased her head between the wires, ignoring pain from sharpened barbs, and tasted of the other side within her reach some morsel sweet. Isolating to meet desires with single focus was what resonated with me the most. And I think a lot of people are in that situation at the moment. And sometimes, although the grass may be greener on the other side, how at what cost? And what did you think, Pam?
Oh, my goodness. This is just a wonderful extended metaphor. I like how he uses the cow's obsession with getting that grass thing on the other side, those delicious, sweet yellow buds, as like how we often become so easily distracted by the shiny things that we don't see the danger that surrounds us. I really feel like this has a wonderful underlying social commentary about how we can become so placated to not notice, not speak up, you know, and really in the end, you know, our obsession with getting what we want hurts us. Excellent, right, and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. And now, Captain, what were your thoughts?
I also really appreciated the allegorical style and nature of this piece. It's written very colloquially, very straightforward, great storytelling. It captures you early on and keeps you all the way through. And you find yourself almost trying to warn this poor creature away from this path to self-destruction. Yet, you know, as Pam said, she's sought this desirable thing on the other side of the fence, but to what cost? To what end? You know, to the detriment of herself. She eased her head between the wires, ignoring pain from sharp barbs. And have we not all known someone like that, or had our own moment at that where the little voice is screaming at you, don't do that, but we're not listening. To listen to your own gut, I think, is one of the most difficult things in life to learn. But increasing her desire for more, she must have more or nothing else. So she stayed all day and night, refusing to be coaxed away. This is what we call in the military target fixation. She didn't see anything else in her life except these buds. And it is a beautifully crafted piece. I think this one even also, you've got some FPP candidates here big time. Do you want this one?
Yes. You can chuck this one in, but like honestly, it's just been one of those episodes, one poem after the other.
I've just
been so impressed with what's come out of these Marcel Proust quotes. So
agreed. And this almost has a flavor to. I'm trying to think the other poet that he writes to nature with such vivid descriptions.
Swan Song. Swan Song.
Thank you very much. I saw an S and I couldn't. I still had Skylark in my head. Gerald Green does this similar. Very. Their verse is very grounded in reality, but that doesn't take away from the fact that it's often very eloquent.
Thank you, Captain. And next I'll give this one a read. This is by Hakan Seven, and it's called Love is Different in Paris. Sweet memories, love in Paris. A spring morning with your loved one. I came to you with the scent of flowers, a dinner together, enough with fresh wine. If there's love, love in Paris is different. When fresh spring branches bloom, love entered the hearts once. You can't recognize yourself every time you look in the mirror. With hearts burning with the fire of love, love in Paris is different. End poem. And this was written to the prompt, love is space and time measured by the heart. And Pam, would you like to make the first comment?
Yeah, I thought this was a wonderful, thoughtful brevity in the idea that sometimes when we step away from the ordinary, things expand, become different, and there's really a sense of the freshness of love when it first starts to bloom. So excellent write and very well done.
Yeah, I was picking that up as well. When fresh spring branches bloom, love entered the hearts once. You can't recognize yourself every time you look in the mirror. And it almost does remind me of, obviously being in love, but there is an ease in your heart, and it's not just the infatuation stage, even though it has its difficulties. As you mentioned, Pam, like maybe a change of scenery helps. But it also speaks to me of someone having your back, truly having your back, and it being a magnificent feeling. And what did you think, Captain?
I agree with both your comments. It is an elegant brevity, and it speaks to love feeling differently based on the location. And I think it's just we tend to look at things differently when we're experiencing them for the first time.
Thank you, Captain. And next we have a SoundCloud by I Love Poems, and it should be in the studio, and I've just put it in the forum, so when you're ready, Pam.
All right. Let me go ahead and find that. Here we go.
I Love Poems. My journey starts with me and ends with me. I'm a stranger and a traveler in this life. Traveling light lets me get rid of all excesses to fulfill my journey the best I can. I rise with dawn to arm myself with self-awareness and consciousness. I take with me life companion, fate to suit and comfort my soul. Crossing terrains and wondrous places, I will make more stops to enjoy and contemplate beautiful things with all gratitude. My conscience will stand there to help me avoid getting in a dangerous zone called devil temptations. In my fate, I will take refuge when I get weak. I will travel the world and get to know new people with different colors and different languages. We will connect with just a part to new destiny with no regrets. In my new destination, I have to help the needy and the poor with endless returns and no adieu. I will learn from the wise people surrounding me in my life. My prayers, along with my awareness, will remind me gently not to lose sight of my journey, not to get too attached, and to see with vision the ephemeral nature of this life, to make my journey meaningful and with purpose. To live this purpose, I need to ensure my body and my mind are in optimal condition and shun unhealthy lifestyle as much as I can. I will open my eyes wider with a marvelous absorption of my beautiful environment and take a moment to reflect on the signs of the creation of the universe. With mindfulness and patience, I strive to accept the unexpected and manage it the best I can. My fate will remind me discomforts are temporary. One trauma and tragedy came my way once again. I took refuge with my grievance and pain in my fate with prayers and tears. It reminds me softly, never give up, recuperate and continue. My journey continue until it's time to go. End of poem.
Thank you. I love poems for the SoundCloud. And Captain, would you like to start the comments off this?
Oh, my goodness. This is a lengthy piece for Salwa. But it is so profoundly reverential. She starts, I'm a stranger and a traveler in this life. Traveling light lets me get rid of all excesses to fulfill my journey the best I can. Such wisdom in the first stanza. And then she goes on to expound on her philosophies. And this is such a profound piece, almost philosophical. And I shouldn't say almost, it is philosophical in its approach. I will learn from the wise people surrounding me in my life. My prayers, along with my awareness, will remind me gently not to lose sight of my journey. This is truly a really remarkable piece. There's a lot of depth to it and a lot of a tender wisdom.
Thank you, Captain. And Pam, what did you think?
Oh, this is absolutely beautiful. And I think the phrase that Bobby said, tender wisdom, is perfect for this. I like how this gently reminds us that this is only our temporary life, our temporary terrain. And there is something more beautiful out there. But in the meantime, there is beauty to be found here on Earth and adventure, and it should be embraced and enjoyed and explored. And I just think this is absolutely a wonderful write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Yeah, I enjoyed the wisdom that was imparted in this piece. And I think Sal has captured that life is not a race and there are pitfalls and triumphs. And all you can do is your level-headed best. And my favorite part was, I rise with dawn to arm myself with self-awareness and consciousness. I take with my life companion faith to soothe and comfort my soul. I find rising with the dawn immensely helpful in my personal life. And as for faith, I think that's on a sliding scale, depending on the day. So with that, we will move on to another piece. And Captain, did you want to briefly run through the contest we've got going while I bring up the next piece?
No, I hadn't prepared for that at all. No, but I will. I've got to summon it here, lest I speak foolishly. Let's see. Okay, our next one coming up is going to be, The Master of Faces. We have the artwork of Oleg Shupliak, that we've got quite a number of rights on, and we'll be reading that next week. And after that, unless we change our schedule here, we've got I'm looking for the arrow so I can back up. Here we go. We also have two contests currently in the works. One is The Thoughts and Philosophies of Mother Teresa, and the other one is Oscar Wilde's Picture of Dorian Gray, quotes from Oscar Wilde's only novel, The Picture of Dorian Gray, which actually was quite controversial in its day and managed to get him thrown in jail for 2 years. So certainly some interesting and provocative excerpts from that piece, and they definitely want to hear people's thoughts on that.
Thank you, Captain. And I have actually got Pam, one of Pam's poems up next. So Pam, when you're ready, if you want to give that a read.
Absolutely. Now, I did not have anything inspired by Marcel Proust, but I felt like this poem had the kind of reflective nature that a lot of your poetry has had tonight. So this is an untitled poem, and it goes like this. I was glancing through an online article on symbolism in classical art. Glancing is a dim reflection of reading when one eye and ear must be kept alert. Today was a better day than some. Only popsicle sticks and plastic forks were broken, and I started thinking about my own pictures collected over the years. I have never ripped apart a picture of my ex, even though the sound of tearing paper is satisfying, or started a bonfire with snapshots of once upon a time gone wrong, because I don't want my children to say, you never gave me the opportunity to know my father and have him be right. Does everything have a meaning? I'm paranoid about nighttime house fires, mostly because I don't want to deal with loss and grief or have my children deal with them. I don't want all those memories to become piles of ash. But there's a small secret part of me that fears I'll be standing outside the smoldering ruins of my home, passerbys with cell phones taking pictures of the me that sleeps in a warm cotton T-shirt and nothing else. I'm just not prepared for my 15 minutes of fame as a white trash meme. Today, I was thinking about the hundreds of pictures I have posted on Facebook and cows. I have an image in my head, in my mind, 200 years after my death, students of art and philosophy trying to find the deeper meaning behind the cows, the farmers' market meals, and the messes in the backgrounds of each photograph and poem.
Wow, that was epic. It was part confessional poem or confessional poetry, and then there was just a rawness to this write. I think I was really drawn to I have never ripped apart a picture of my ex, even though the sound of tearing paper is satisfying, or started a bonfire with snapshots of once upon a time gone wrong, because I don't want my children to say you never gave me the opportunity to know my father and have them be right. That just hits home, I imagine, for a lot of people in the same situation that have gone completely the opposite direction. And I think it's harder these days to completely erase someone from your life, no matter whether they're a friend, a former partner, a father, a mother, irrespective, because everything's online and you can't delete or completely eradicate somebody online. And then you go down to these lines, I have an image in my mind 200 years after my death, students of art and philosophy trying to find the deeper meaning behind the cows, the farmers' market meals, and the messes in the background of each photograph. Like, there's just a wry sense of humor to that ending, but there's also an astuteness to it as well, in that who's to say that wouldn't actually happen? I know myself that I focus on the background of photos more than I probably should, for clues. And the clues as to how people live their lives, clues as to what they're hiding. And I just love this poem, Pam. Thank you for reading it.
Well, Well, I can tell you, if you saw the background of my pictures, you would be like, that woman is not hiding much. She does not fold her laundry often.
Judging by how many contests you run a week and a month, I can understand that because I have no excuse and mine would be the same. Not to mention the fact you're raising a family also, so give yourself a break. And Captain, what did you think? That's
well deserved. It makes me feel like a dilettante. I'm retired. I do as I damn well please every day.
Well, there you go.
I think after listening to this, I would call it mental meanderings, because there's a stream of consciousness at work here and of unconsciousness. But it's revealing in that certain things have popped to the surface. Does everything have a meaning? I really like that question. I think that is profound. I've never ripped apart a picture. I on the other hand, when my late partner and I moved into the house that I'm still occupying, I sat one night and went through my wedding album with my ex-husband, picked out the pictures I liked, and burned the rest of it in our brand new fireplace and enjoyed it thoroughly. Incinerated.
I could definitely
my past
see
life.
That. I could definitely see that. And
I'm one of those.
I'm
one of those people that. Not only will I burn the bridge, but I'll salt the earth afterwards. nothing grows. And I take no prisoners, and I turn my back, and I walk away. Hence, again, the phrase, do not look for me in the past. I don't live there.
Absolutely.
But I love this phrase. I have an image in my mind. 200 years after my death, students of art and philosophy trying to find the deeper meaning behind the cows in the farmer's market, meals, and the message in the background of each photograph. I really like that that projection of what is significant now will take on a whole different meaning to the future that has no clue as to the backstory or the background. I've often said to my friends, I said, when this civilization crumbles and 5,000 years from now, when they unearth it, the archaeologists of the future are going to think that McDonald's was a god because there are temples everywhere.
That is a really good point. That's both serious and funny, and it's true.
There are temples everywhere, and I once there was an article I read years ago, and it was a parody on an archaeological dig in a hotel that had been destroyed by the apocalypse, and they're digging in the hotel, and they find the toilet seat, and they think it is an ornament worn around the neck.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So welcome back, Neutron.
Thanks. I got dropped.
There was a book.
I don't know if I remember when it got dropped.
Who the author was, but the title of the book is A Canticle for Leibowitz, and it's about an apocalyptic civilization being destroyed by apocalypse and coming back through religion and what have you. And someone finds these blueprints in a guy's lunchbox, and the guy's name was Leibowitz, and they ascribe some kind of religious significance to it, and it's amazing what they take a simple thing like a blueprint and they expand it into a religion. I found your closing on your piece extremely intriguing and at the same time very philosophically insightful. because like the line from the Terminator, the first movie, the waitress is just standing there looking at the kid drops a scoop of ice cream in the waitress's pocket, and the other waitress says, in 100 years, who's going to care? So I really, enjoyed the philosophy that you show in this, Pam. This is a wonderful piece.
Great comment, Captain. And I'm just going to read one to round out the show. If there's time for comments, that's fine. If there's not, there's not. And then we'll just wrap it up. So this
good.
One I thought would suit the suffering prompt by Marcel Proust. I'll just see if I can bring it up now. We're healed of a suffering only by experiencing it to the full. And it's called Blistered Heart. The silence splinters like wood hissing and spitting in a fire drum. Your voice replaced by my sobbing soliloquies. My chest burns from the coals and embers that dissolve within. Third degree burns, blister, and serum fills the cavity between my lungs. There is no preparing for open heart surgery. Surgeons brutally cracking my ribs and sternum. Take my rib, Adam, and call it your own. Veins stripped of the color cerulean blue. Blood runs clear and my lips are pasty from the tourniquet affixed my neck. I am hemorrhaging salt and my cheeks are bloated like a decaying carcass with lips pursed and trembling without the wonderment of a newborn. You shone bright like the evening star, but like a gas lantern you were extinguished by exposure to gale forces. I should have shielded your eternal flame from the apothecary's proffering poisons and poems. And Pam, are you back? I think Pam may have dropped, possibly.
She says, I can't hear anything. Are you two still talking?
Yeah, yeah. So I will wrap up the show on that basis, unless we get Pam back up. And
I'll make a little, sending her a little note here.
Oh, awesome, awesome, because I can't get back to the page. It's just playing with my mind. But thank you, everyone. Thank you, everyone. And thank you, Pam. And yeah, we'll call it a day.
Did we cover everyone, or do we have some leftovers?
No, we covered everyone. We got through everyone. We even had to get a few extra on the board. But I think we're going to cut out very shortly. Pam's just said, "Okay, as long as you can hear each other, it's all good."
Yeah.
So I'll just let her know we're done.
I say buona notte. Rest well. Now that you've located your voice, make sure you don't where you can find it next time.
Yeah.
Good,
right.
good to hear your voice finally again. So take care of yourself.
Yeah, it is. You too. All right.
Ciao.
Ciao.